Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right. Welcome back. Chase Thomas podcast. Late on a Wednesday. That means Matt Green, fellow University of North Georgia alumni, is here. Matt, how ready are you to talk about Tom Herman being comfortable being a offensive analyst for the Chicago Bears and showing no interest in returning to the college ranks?
That was an obscure place to start this this conference championship week, coaching carousel, whatever you want to call this week of college football that's happening.
I don't think it's a carousel anymore. I don't know what to call it. Here's an adjective I would call it. Bad. This is bad for the sport. Is something that I cannot escape is the badness. That's a good word for this. Is I'm very doom and gloom as the days have gone on. The more I read, the more Brian Kelly keeps putting his foot in his mouth and seeing how that's all unfolding, to see just everything across the board. And just I don't enjoy any of this. That's what I've decided. Is it's great content. It's cracking me up to see how this is all unfolding. The transfer portal, which is like a secondary thing, is just preposterous also at the moment, because all these guys are leaving and players are like holding universities hostages, basically, because it's like, if this coach leaves, then we're all leaving. So then you're just torpedoing the next coach. And like, there's all kinds of variables here. But like, I don't think any of this is good. And that's something I cannot escape. In all honesty, is that like, I don't know how you put the genie back in the bottle, but it's just not having a governing body, not having someone to, not having a Roger Goodell or an Adam Silver to just work through and figure this stuff out, instead of all the commissioners across college football just basically do whatever they want and figure this out on their own. This is one of those big issues where it's just like, man, I wish there was some kind of governing body that oversaw all this and was just like, hey, this has to end. We're cleaning this up. We're cleaning that up, because this is insane. It's not even the money that these coaches are getting. The sport brings in a bunch of money. Like, this is just part of the deal now, as the sport's TV deals get higher. The universities make more money. Tuition's gone up. All this, the donors, all that. They all have the money. Like, Mel Tucker got an extension because the donors stepped up. Like, the story is, like, the two specific donors up the pie to keep them, and they were more serious about Michigan State football, and they've been a long time, so they see him as an upgrade over Mark D'Antonio. So they ponied up. Whatever, that's all fine. I don't really care about that. It's more of like,
we talk money in sports, like, everyone's overpaid, but you're only worth what someone's willing to pay you.
Correct.
So that's just like a whole bag of worms you're not even getting into.
Where I'm struggling is how this is all going. The timing of all of this is just a joke. The college football playoff, like, Luke Fickell, if Notre Dame doesn't have to rush to lock up the next signing class because early signing day is right around the corner, and Marcus Freeman is such an ace recruiter, that you kind of have to lock him in to place to stay here instead of pursuing Matt Campbell or Luke Fickell, because you don't want to blow up this recruiting class that's going to be one of the best Notre Dame's had in a long time. And he's just such a good recruiter and a good defensive mind. And you're not really sure because he's in his mid-30s and all this, that, and the other. I don't know. Like, Notre Dame could make the college football playoff with an interim head coach now. What happened if Luke Fickell really wanted this job and then he can't take it because his team's going to be in the playoff? Matt can't. Like, it's just, you go up and down the list and the timing of all of it is just awful, and you just see what's happening to these classes. And Malachi Nelson's already flipped, another five-star running back's flipped. Like, USC is going to clean up relatively quickly. Oklahoma, the next coach there, he's screwed. I don't know, man. It's just a lot, and it keeps evolving faster and faster, and the portal and who's in, who's out is just, I was going through it today and I was just like, man, there are so many names. Like, next year it's going to take us, you and I, what, a week and a half just to get a handle on where everybody is in the Power Five, like where everybody ended up, like the extra COVID year still in effect for everybody because they all got a mulligan year. And so many kids have not used the first transfer without penalty rule yet. So it's still, we're not completely okay on that front. But man, I'm tired. Just explaining all of that has worn me out, Matt Green.
Yeah, without a doubt. And you obviously said several things there, but what it all comes down to, it's just the calendar is just all out of whack.
Yes.
Like, we started talking last week, like, you know, Matt Rhule being linked to one of these jobs. And then you're like, well, you know, he's not going to leave a job before the NFL season is over. And then you start thinking about, like, the signing period and everything and the logistics of an NFL coach ever going to college to be a head coach. And then, like, that just got me thinking more. It's just like, like you said, like, how are you going to be on a college football playoff staff and take a major head coaching job? Like, it just, it complicates things so much. Like, you remember when Dan Quinn was with the Seahawks, like, the Falcons could wait till the playoffs were completely done and then hire their head coach. Like, they could wait till the season was over. Like, we need some sort of, like, well, to start with, the early signing period is what messes everything up. So it completely, like, it did the exact opposite of what they wanted it to do.
Mm-hmm.
I think when the rule was put in, like, what the whole reason for the early signing period in my thought was that some dudes are just completely over the recruiting process and they know where they're going to college. Let them go ahead and sign. So if you're doing that, it should be before their senior year. But if you just rush it to December after, like, right a week after their high school football season ends and the college seasons are ending, like, it's just 2 months before the February signing day now, it just accelerated the whole process. So that's the first thing that I think, if you just move the signing period, like, you can still have that early one because some guys aren't going to be affected if a coach is fired, or they feel confident their coach won't be fired and they're willing to sign in August. So to move it back to February signing day, I think, is the first solution to this, because then you also, like, Brian Kelly doesn't have to decide between the life job of his lifetime and the current team that he helped build and construct that could potentially be in the college football playoff. Like, this should be an absolute red flag to anyone that's a higher up in college football. And like you said, we have conference commissioners running this sport. We have a committee that's built with commissioners and athletic directors. We don't have a Roger Goodell. That's what the NCAA is supposed to be, and they just kind of fail every time they try to do anything. They try to pass anything, essentially. But that's what you need. You just need someone to just, maybe it's a transfer period, you know, maybe right when January 1st opens up, there's the transfer portal opens up. Like, there's just,
you can't transfer mid-season and stuff like that. You can't just, like, Teyon Evans left a week before the season's over. It's just like, what are we doing here?
Well, and yeah, and I don't even know what the point of that is either. It's like, you're not going to go play for another team.
Right.
Like, are you still enrolled in classes? You're just not going to practice? Like, I don't understand exactly what that even means. So, yeah, it's just, the transfer portal is its own, like, beast, right? Mm-hmm. But I feel like the signing early signing day just, like, throws everything off. Like, you just need a direct calendar. Like, with you have you have with the NFL. You have, you know, you have the draft, and you have the free agent signing period, and you have, you know, just you just have a calendar of the way things are supposed to happen. And this is just, it's already a crazy enough sport. It feels like coaches, like seeing Lincoln Riley go to USC, and with this one-time transfer rule now in effect, it's just like you can just go ahead and just take the coaches and take, you know, a third of the roster with you to another program. Like, that just, there's something seems not right about that. And that's one thing on its own. There's not a real way to police that, you know, but if Lincoln Riley is an awesome guy and just people want to play for him, you know, there's nothing you can do about all these 2023 prospects that no longer want to go to Oklahoma and now they want to go to USC. But with Brian Kelly coaching a team that's potentially going to be in the college football playoff, like, I mean, one unexpected loss happens this week and Notre Dame's in. And it might not even be that unexpected. So this should be a red flag for anyone in college football. Like, we have a problem. Like, we were worried about guys sitting out the Sugar Bowl last year and in recent years in a game that doesn't matter because they're worried about their NFL future. Now you have a head coach leaving a team instead of going to the college football playoff. That's insane to me. And it sounds like Marcus Freeman is going to be not just the interim coach. Sounds like he's going to be the head coach of Notre Dame.
And I just have to wonder, it's so interesting to see how people are reacting to this on Twitter in real time, because there has been a lot of momentum and there was a lot of current players and former players that were pushing for Freeman. He's only been there for a year. He played at Ohio State. There were some rumors that Ohio State was trying to bring him in as their next DC. Brian Kelly obviously tried to bring him and Tommy Reese to LSU. But it's like, he's an unknown still. Like, he is an unknown. We have no idea what he is going to be as the head guy running Notre Dame. We know that he's a good recruiter, but that's not everything. Like, I think the people who are sure of Marcus Freeman, and are also more comfortable with Freeman over Luke Fickell or Matt Campbell, I don't get it. I would be nervous. I would be very nervous if I was a Notre Dame fan, because, I mean, obviously going back to back with Cincinnati head coaches is kind of funny, but this is tough. And also, Notre Dame and Oklahoma are in just uncharted waters right now. They never have sitting head coaches leave for another program. Like, they're Notre Dame, they're Oklahoma, and their coaches left for ostensibly greener pastures. Like, it hasn't happened to Oklahoma since, what, 1947? Like, this is uncharted waters for two top six programs in college football. And their coaches left. And Notre Dame's coach left with a college football playoff appearance very much in play. And they may have picked their next head coach because the other coach is having to focus on the college football playoff for a while longer. And they can't wait on them because the calendar is so messed up that they can't even really interview him and do their due diligence. So there was no due diligence done by Jack Swarbrick. Like, they just didn't have time. There's no way. You weren't interviewing and talking with Matt Campbell and Luke Fickell all that seriously. Like, there's just no way. So it feels kind of rushed on that front. I don't like that these teams can just negotiate with other sitting head coaches like this and just pluck them and just, I don't know, man. I think it starts with, like you said, the calendar, but it is a bad look where even the college football playoff and an opportunity there is not enough to keep these sitting head coaches at bay. And I don't know how you legislate it out with the way the current NCAA is constructed and the way college football is constructed, but it's a bad look. And I don't know. I don't like it.
No, I hear you there. And like you said, this it is a completely rushed decision by Notre Dame. Like, you just know they couldn't have done their due diligence in that time. Like, you know, they're supposed, you know, they say their, you know, athletic departments are supposed to always have a short list of mm-hmm. who they would go after. But, like, the committee chairman essentially said that, like, they're taking into account if Notre Dame does or doesn't have a coach, you know? So, like, you can't tell me that this didn't have an impact on Notre Dame wanting to just raise their hand, like, hey, we have a coach. Look, we have a coach. Like, he's not even interim. He's long term. Like, so if we're in the top four, you better put us there. Like, it feels like you said, just such a rushed move. And like Notre Dame's having to make a long-term move just on the snap of a finger when really this should be going into the off season. And, you know, even if you fire a head coach, like in the old format, like they only had a month taking over in January, maybe even less than a month before National Signing Day. Now it's just the entire calendar is just completely thrown off, and they're going to have to do something about it. And I think this offseason is showing how big of a problem it really is. Because I mean, you're just going to lie to these
yes.
recruits. Like there's no chance you don't lie to them. Like regardless of who you are, like one of these guys that's on a playoff, that's on one of these staffs in the college football playoff, you can almost guarantee someone is going to get plucked from somebody, you know. And now,
but it's also
now
like Oklahoma, think about
liar because he was trying to get all these defensive recruits. Like if it's yeah. like Dan Lanning or somebody, mm-hmm. and he ends up taking another job.
Well, think about Oklahoma. All the kids right now who they haven't burned the redshirt year yet. They could all just go to USC without penalty now and all follow Lincoln, like Mims, everybody. They could all just go follow him. Like they yeah. could gut the Oklahoma roster right now, the way this is set up. They could completely gut it.
Yeah, and I don't know if you remember.
And Mark, I'm also, let me clarify, I'm not shedding any tears for Oklahoma and Texas for anything that's happened as of late based on, and I'm not shedding any tears for the 80 at Oklahoma for any late backstabbing and reap what you sow type deal. But anyway, continue.
But you remember Mark Richt. I know Mark Richt talks about like it's like one of the bigger regrets of his career. When he took the Georgia job, he said he wasn't as focused as he should have been on the national championship, being offensive coordinator at Florida State. And I think Oklahoma beat him like 21-2 or something like yep. that. In that,
the Heupel year.
Yeah. Josh Heupel. So it's like, that was before the signing period, before the transfer portal got early signing, before the transfer portal got so crazy. So it's like, if there's a coach out there that's pulling a Kirby Smart and taking a job, but doing double duty and, you know, seeing his team through the playoff and everything, like even those guys are, there's just, you're putting such a level of stress on those guys too. Like it just, they need to do something about the calendar to just, college football is already the Wild West enough. This is just, it's kind of outrageous.
Yeah. Well, of the group, because a lot's happened since we recorded on Sunday night. So of Lincoln Riley, he goes to USC. We have Brian Kelly obviously going to LSU. Marcus Freeman now stepping in at Notre Dame. We have Brent Pry, DC at Penn State. That's been with Franklin for a really long time. He goes to Virginia Tech as the head guy. You get, Kalen DeBoer, coach at Fresno, but also the longtime FCS big time winner, I believe, at Montana State. He goes to Washington. Washington State promotes from within their DC. Who else? Anyone else? Sonny Dykes, TCU. Sonny Cumbie goes to Louisiana Tech. And then you have Texas Tech's already turning into a mess because they kept him on. Joey McGuire kept him on this staff, and he's already gone for that. Rhett Lashley, Miami's OC, he goes to SMU to fill the Sonny Dykes spot. I think FIU is still open. Dave Clawson gets a long-term extension at Wake Forest. Did you see what he said about Kirk Herbstreit this week?
No, I didn't.
He did this whole press conference where Kirk apparently just said that, like, the Wake Forest had 6 fans, something like that. And he and Dave Clawson did like this whole bit on the 6 fans that they allocated tickets for at the box office or something for, I don't remember if it was for the upcoming ACC title game or this past weekend, but he did not take too kindly to the 6 fan stuff that Kirk threw out. But to be fair to Kirk, is the smallest school in FBS, so it can't be that crazy with the number of fans. But we love you, Wake. We love you, Deacon fans, too. But yeah, like there's all kinds of turnover everywhere. Oklahoma is still open, so that's one big variable left over. But of all the movement, who intrigues you the most? Who are you most excited about? And who are you most pessimistic/cynical about?
Did you say Napier in Florida?
Oh, I forgot. Yes. See, that's what I'm saying. Like, there's so much. And then Billy Napier. Yeah.
Yeah. So when we were talking on the LSU job, you know, shoot, that feels like months ago.
Yeah.
I think you said Franklin, and you kind of sold me on Franklin just because it's like, I feel like just a guy who's like a proven head coach. Like, you don't have to go try to find the next, you know, guy, try to reinvent the wheel type thing. Just go find a guy who's a proven good head coach, because LSU, like, no disrespect to Ed Orgeron or Les Miles, but like, I don't know how good of a coach either of those guys was. Like, obviously Les Miles had a much longer track record, but he would just make some of the most bonehead plays at times. Like, the talent at LSU is just so ridiculous. If you just have a good, solid head coach, I feel like the sky's the limit. And I think Brian Kelly, if I was ranking my coaches in college football, is probably, you know, three or four. He's right up there. So this is one of the best coaches in college football. And I think LSU, basically, that's a slam dunk. Like, Lincoln Riley at USC, that's definitely intriguing because – like, USC has to be sexy, right? Like, that's what we talked about. Like, you can't get Clay Helton. You can't just go get a good coach. He has to be exciting. And that's exactly what Lincoln Riley is. And you've just seen, especially the last couple years in the SEC, just the influx of talent from the state of California. It seems like every roster has been loaded with multiple contributors from the state of California. Like, these guys are not staying out on the West Coast in the Pac-12. Like, Oregon's getting some, but like, that the talent was going all over the place. There is so much talent in the state of California. Lincoln Riley just immediately makes USC just such a more attractive program. Like, if they can start to lock down the state of California, like we've seen USC do in their heyday, like, that's going to revive college football on the West Coast, to be honest. Like, not to like make too big of a deal about it, but that's such a big deal. So I'm really curious to see who Oklahoma gets, but I think LSU and USC definitely got two huge hires.
Who are you more excited about, or who do you think wins first? Cause I think they both end up winning. I don't think, man, it's hard to say both will end up with the national title, but,
I don't think it's crazy to think both women win a title. I think Riley will probably get to a playoff first, just because it's the Pac-12, and I feel like as soon as you have a good team, like, you can run through that conference and win and get in the playoffs. So, and there's just, you know, there's always those brand biases too when it comes to the rankings and the playoffs and everything. Like, as soon as USC is good at all, you know, everyone, USC is back. Like, that's what everyone loves to say. Miami is back every time they're 4-0. And it's like, okay, Texas is back. You know, it's like, I just think Lincoln Riley, we know how good of a coach he is. And I wonder how much of it's like the whole Ryan Day thing, like starting on third base, thinking you hit a triple. If Lincoln Riley thinks like, you know, I need to go somewhere and prove that like I can build a program. Like, I wonder if that's part of this. I mean, it's probably just all the perks. I don't know if you saw all the perks he was getting on.
Oh, no, I saw them. Yeah. So when people were like, oh, he's scared of the SEC, it's like, I think he just got a really good deal. I think that dude was like, okay, you're buying my home for a signing bonus. And all of a sudden, like,
he buying both of his houses for $500,000 over asking price. Like, I've never heard anything like that. That was, and they also bought him a $6 million house. So yep. Like, the University of Southern California just owns two houses in Norman, Oklahoma right now. Like, that's crazy to me.
Oh, do you know what his two dogs' names are, by the way?
24/7 use of a private jet, apparently. Oh yeah. His dogs, Boomer and Sooner, right?
Yeah.
That's awkward. Can he change a dog's name?
I don't know. Can you
fight and on? Isn't that what they do? USC fight on.
Can you? That is fight on. Can it like Zeus? I mean, you could try it. Do you think Zeus, if you started calling him something different, if you started calling him Jefferson for a couple weeks, do you think he'd?
That's absurd. Zeus's original name was actually Bosco.
Wait, really?
Fun fact for you.
What do you mean his original name? Was he adopted?
Before my Tori and her family took Zeus. See, that was his name.
Wait, how old was he?
Like, less than a year old.
Okay. But did he respond to Bosco?
I wonder if he would. And then what was Maddox's name? Maddox was Willy Wonka.
Didn't he get him as a puppy though?
Yeah, but this people like named the whole litter after, like, Charlie the Chocolate Factory.
Okay.
So it was like, yeah, there was like a Charlie and
okay,
like Willy Wonka and stuff. Yeah.
And you went with Willy Wonka. All right.
That's what they named him, I guess, because when you're fostering dogs, I guess you gotta get creative on the names, I guess.
But you stayed away from Charlie and Violet and I'm trying to think of the rest of
names. Yeah, there's that other Veruca.
Veruca Salt. Yeah,
that was one of the dogs.
You know they're doing a remake, or not even a remake, a prequel kind of deal.
Didn't they already do a remake?
Yeah, it's called Wonka, and it's I think it's Timothy Chalamet, but they're basically going back and how
he started the chocolate factory.
Yeah, and how he found the Oompa Loompas and every like it's a. I think it's supposed to be pretty dark.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah, it's a lot. But back to what we were saying.
We even get there? I don't even know.
The dogs with Lincoln's dogs. But so if you had to pick between, okay, let's think about this. We haven't mentioned Napier at all. Like, do you think, like, if you're a Georgia fan right now, you're a Tennessee fan, are you nervous about Napier because he's been so selective? Or are you like, well, LSU was not interested. That's where he's from. Like, they were not, Scott Woodward did not try. If he wanted Billy Napier, he could have gotten him. They let Florida get him, but everyone speaks highly of Billy Napier. He obviously won a lot at ULL. He has the Nick Saban background. He coached
at UL, the use there.
It's ULL forever. Won't change that. They're not just going to be Louisiana. It's silly to me. I refuse to do that. Like, you're not you. Like, you know, there's Louisiana Monroe. There's Louisiana Tech.
It's them flexing on UL Monroe. That's exactly what it is. They're like, we're better than you.
But now you're not, because guess what?
You have to specify who you guys are. We're just Louisiana.
The Warhawks. Are they the Warhawks now, or were they Warhawks? I never remember this.
They are the Warhawks now. I think they were like the Indians or something like that.
Okay. Another side tangent, but are you concerned at all about Florida bringing in Napier? Because I'm a wait and see, but I have my doubts.
The point you made, I think I've heard a few people say, you know, kind of, it's just kind of this perception that LSU had first dibs at Napier and they didn't want him, right? And it's like, yeah, they didn't want him, but they also went out instead and got one of the best coaches in college football. So, like, they made an absolute, like, splash hire. Like, Billy Napier is, you know, a hot name and one of the next up-and-coming coaches in college football, but Brian Kelly is a proven commodity. So it's not like, you know, Billy Napier is not as good as Brian Kelly, so he sucks. I just think it's kind of where Florida is compared to where LSU is, that they can be in a position to actually poach one of the best coaches at one of the best programs in college football right now. And Florida's not necessarily in that position. But with that said, like, I just don't think Florida is going to be as difficult as a rebuild as some people might, because, like, obviously Dan Mullen, like, this roster needs work, because Dan Mullen didn't recruit well. He didn't, you know, stock the shelves with 4-star players, but there's just so much talent to be had in the state of Florida. I think a young coach with some energy that can, you know, start to sell this program, like, while Florida State and Miami are down at the same time, like, just because, like, Napier doesn't, like, terrify me doesn't mean he's not going to, like, have Florida competing in the SEC East, I would say, like, 2 or 3 years from now. Like, I just don't think Florida's, like, a long ways away.
That's fair. That's fair. Well, what do you also think about Kelly? Are you concerned about the staff? Because he's not going to get Freeman and Reese. I think he's going to be able to get whoever he wants. Clearly, by paying Brian Kelly what they paid him, he's going to be able to have just carte blanche to go get whoever he sees fit. But the thing about Kelly and LSU, the one thing I'll say, and I do think he'll win a national title there in a couple years. He's 60. Clearly, he made a move. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff. The 11-minute meeting he did, where he called the meeting the next day at 7 a.m. for these kids. They had to get up at 7 a.m. or they had to be up at 6 to be at the wherever the meeting was for him to tell them, and the meeting lasts 7 minutes. Is that not preposterous? bonkers. I'd be so pissed if I was an Notre Dame player for what's happened over the last couple of days.
Yeah, I'm not sure what the right way is to go about that, though.
Not 11 minutes.
Because you have to, like, the age of social media and just 24-hour news, like, people just find this information breaks before you can tell everyone you want to tell. So it's like, yeah, it sucks to, like, do this first thing in the morning, but, like what is he really supposed to say? Like, I even felt like that watching that video that leaked, that was like 4 minutes of him talking. Like, I even felt like that was just kind of blowing smoke. It's like, don't tell me about how, like, magical of an experience you had and, like, greatest years of your life here. Like, just tell me you got better opportunities somewhere else. So you're bouncing. Like, what it just felt. I don't know what the right way to go about that is at the same time. So it definitely seemed awkward.
There you go. Did you have any other news items you wanted to hit before we get into our conference championship pick'em?
No, I think that's all I got. Well, you want to talk about the rankings, the new playoff rankings?
They're pretty much, I mean, it's about what we expected, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, go ahead.
Like, who do you think had, like, do you think Notre Dame has a shot to be in the top four?
Yes, but this is all weird stuff. I don't want them to now. Like, I'm going to be so upset if we get this. Like, but then again, the other part of me is like, if they do, it's like we need those, like, painful, uncomfortable situation so that they have to adjust, you know, or like they need to see it in real time of like, oh, this is insane that we have Notre Dame in the college football playoff with an interim coach because their coach left for another job while their team was fighting for a college football playoff spot. Maybe we should all get together and fix this because this is not okay. I'm kind of rooting for that because I think you need a little bit of chaos to sow change, but I don't know. Chaos is also a ladder. Shout out to Littlefinger. And I don't know. I don't know.
The most telling part about the rankings to me was Baylor going to 9. I feel like, you know, the committee, they can, you know, manipulate these rankings if they want to, you know, make someone's win look a little bit better. Like, give someone a shot. You know, if they win the next week, they could potentially rise. Like Florida last year. Like Florida was number 5, inexplicably lost to a terrible LSU team at home and dropped to 6. It was just like the committee was clearly trying to set up an opportunity for Florida to win the SEC championship and still get in the playoff somehow. Like with Notre Dame at 6, like you said, well, maybe not interim. Now he's a full-time coach, but with a brand new – their head coach leaving, like – no one wants to put them in the playoff. Ohio State just lost, so you had to put them down some. But to have Ole Miss jump ahead of Baylor and Ohio State still stay ahead of Baylor, it just doesn't feel like Baylor can conceivably jump from 9 to 4 if they beat number 5 Oklahoma State. Like, but if Baylor was at 7, like just behind Notre Dame, well, they, you know, Notre Dame didn't play anyone. They beat Oklahoma State. Like, you could justify Baylor jumping up. I'm almost at the point where if we have chaos, like, I think the Big 12 champion should get in regardless of who it is. Like, a 2-loss Baylor should get in over 1-loss Notre Dame or over 2-loss Bama if they lose the SEC championship. Like, I don't know. I because there's so few of these, like, true play-in games. I don't know. I thought it was interesting where they put Baylor because I think that almost says that they don't have a shot to be in the playoff if they win.
That's fair. I don't know. I mean, there's no way Bama gets in if they lose, right? Like, even if it's close.
Well, see, I don't – like, if Michigan loses and Bama loses, like, who's got a better resume, Bama or Michigan? Like, Michigan beat Ohio State. Who's their next best win? Wisconsin? I'm not really sure. Bama would have just lost to number 1 Georgia. And that's the thing. Bama would have just lost to number 1 Georgia, where Michigan would just lost to, what, 13 Iowa? Like, that's not a good look. But neither of those teams should really be in. Like, I feel like at that point, it should be Cincinnati. It should be the Big 12 champion. And then I don't know how you keep Notre Dame out at that point. So I don't know. I don't like seeing teams lose their last game and get in the college football playoff. But who knows? If Bama were to lose to Georgia 31-30, you know, it's hard to say they're not one of the top four teams. So I don't know. It's we're constantly balancing this top four teams / most deserving teams. So I don't know. I think what the interesting thing could be is if Alabama beats Georgia, Michigan wins, those are three spots right there. If Oklahoma State beats Baylor, I think you could see Oklahoma State jump Cincinnati. I think that's the scenario where Cincinnati could actually be left out.
All I want at this point is 1 Georgia, 2 Michigan, 3 Oklahoma State, 4 Cincy. That's all I want. I want it clean. I want it neat.
Yeah.
That's what I want.
You think 3 Cincy, 3 Oklahoma State, 4 Cincy?
Okay, yeah, anyone who is talking themselves into Oklahoma, or Cincy over Oklahoma, based on Oklahoma State's resume versus Cincy and what we've seen and just this sheer dominance in a tougher division, a tougher slate of games, yeah. I don't know how you go. Also, it's another tip of the cap to Matt Campbell. That's their only loss this year was to Matt Campbell and Iowa State. And that's something I would be just so concerned about if I'm a Notre Dame fan. Like, I don't know. This is a great job now. And if Freeman flames out just because you went with him because he's a good recruiter, and a good defensive mind. Like, he is a good DC and he has a good track record. But, like, I don't know. I would be nervous because Matt Campbell. So the Cyclones have had 5 consecutive winning seasons in a row. Do you know how many times that happened in the previous 26 seasons before Matt Campbell got there?
How many, 10 win seasons?
No, or winning, just consecutive winning seasons.
Oh, how many consecutive winning seasons?
Or how many
had?
Total winning, excuse me. So he has had 5 consecutive winning seasons, correct? So yeah. He has had 5 consecutive winning seasons. Before he got there, how many winning seasons had they had total in the last 26 seasons?
Oh, man. Probably like 5.
It's exactly right. 5.
Oh, wow.
Like, I think we don't understand just how bad of a job that's typically been forever. And he's turned that around. And 7-5 is like a disappointment at Iowa State now. And he still beat Oklahoma.
Remember Seneca Wallace, sir? He built that program.
He did. I mean, you don't have to tell me about Seneca Wallace. I've always been a Seneca Wallace
big
guy.
Big Seneca Wallace fan.
But no, like, the whole thing is, like, Matt Campbell can coach his tail off. And Luke Fickell is just built a juggernaut at Cincinnati. And they've been head coaches. And we know they're great. And we know they're top 10 elite coaches. We know that. That they are sure things. They go to Notre Dame, they're winning. They are.
Yeah, no one gets their first head coaching job at Notre Dame. Like, that's just. Like, who's been their last? Oh, shoot. Was Charlie Weiss? That was his first head coaching job, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And how did that work out? He almost beat USC one time.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we'll see.
I don't know. I would just be nervous if I was a Notre Dame fan. I'm just curious because there are some really confident, sure, certain people about Freeman. And I would just be very, very careful because I shouldn't even say careful. I would just be very nervous. That's if I'm a Notre Dame fan, because Campbell and Fickell, I think they both could have gotten. And I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. But maybe Campbell or Fickell go to Oklahoma and then we can see it play out in real time. So conference championship games, they're starting on Friday. Matt Green, you have this in alphabetical order because you like chronological order. They are kind of in alphabetical though, based on what I'm looking right here. But where are we going first?
I don't think you're very good at alphabetical order.
You have CUSA and Pac-12 for Friday. And then on Saturday, you have Big 12 first. Then you have Mountain West, Sun Belt, SEC. Okay, yeah.
It did go in there for a while. I'll give you that. Yeah, so...
don't attack my reading.
As I told you before the show, was not able to access the file to give you the exact numbers on our over-under win totals for the season. But I was doing some tallying, and you did much better than me on these over-under win totals. However, at these Power 5 conference championships, we have 10 teams, you know, 2 teams in each conference. Would you like to guess how many of these 10 teams you got correctly?
So we did all of them. We did the MAC too and everything.
No, I think we only did the over under on the win totals on the Power Five.
Okay. And what was, and you're asking me how many I thought were going to be in the conference title game?
I'm saying of the 10 teams you picked to make the conference title games in the Power Five conference, how many of those do you think you got right?
I got Oregon. I got.
You did not get Oregon.
Did I not put Oregon in the Pac-12 title game?
You were feeling some Washington.
Oh no! Oh goodness gracious! I know I didn't pick Georgia and Alabama. I know
so you sir. You want to go through it? You can go through it.
I'm concerned. I got zero.
You did. You got zero.
Oh my god!
If it makes you feel better, we had the exact same picks in the Big 12, Big 10, and ACC. So neither of us got any. We both had Oklahoma, Iowa State. I think you thought Iowa State would have a better regular season record than Oklahoma. We both had Ohio State, Wisconsin. We both had Clemson, North Carolina. But you had Washington, USC in the Pac-12. Mm. I did have Oregon and the Utah Utes.
Did you really?
I was high on Charlie Brewer. I was thinking he was going to help Utah. Completely wrong about that. But the Utes have rallied. So I got both in the Pac-12, and then I had Georgia and Alabama and the SEC.
He's another guy. He went in the portal in like week two. We never saw him again. Like, just what's the point? He just went in the portal and just disappeared for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I mean, it's just I don't get it. But rallying off or finishing off the SEC, you had Florida and Texas A&M. So you were very good on the over unders. But I'll give you those final numbers next week. But okay. But yeah, in terms of the conference champion chip appearances, not your best work.
Well, I mean, what has been our theme all year? What has been our theme? Like, you've talked about this on this very podcast all season long. It's just that, like, this has been the season where when we think we know a team and we think we know how the season's going, it just flips again. Like, every week, you just never know which top 10 teams are going down. Like, this was the year of just topsy-turvy play where we're just not sure. Like, there's one elite team. That's it. And that's how we felt all year long. And everything else, we're just like, who knows?
Yeah, that's definitely how it seemed. And you got to love it. This is why we love college football. These last few years, there've been a lot of chalk.
Yeah.
And it's nice to get back to some unpredictability. And I think you got to credit some of the post-COVID, like just the back to being 100% capacity in these road stadiums. It's not easy, even if you have better players, to go on the road in just a rowdy atmosphere. And you've seen a lot of unpredictable things happening in college football this year.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, where are we going on Friday?
So start us off, championship weekend on Friday. We got UTSA coming off a loss in their final game of the season, blowing their undefeated season. But this conference championship is in the Alamo Dome. In San Antonio, they're going to play Western Kentucky, and Western Kentucky is a 3-point favorite in this one, which I thought was interesting because UTSA won the shootout at Western Kentucky earlier this year. So I thought it was interesting for them to be favored in this one. That game earlier this year, 52-46, 1,234 combined yards in that game. Just ridiculous offense. Bailey Zappe leading the nation in passing yards, passing touchdowns, 52 touchdowns, 9 picks. The Hilltoppers have won 7 straight coming into this one. I was surprised to see Western Kentucky favored, but after crunching the numbers, I like the Hilltoppers to win and cover.
Whew. This is something where I've gone back and forth. So UTSA just gets weirdly blown out last week for their undefeated season, going down by the Mean Green. Shout out to Seth Luttrell and the good folks down there. Great uniforms, great look. Go Mean Green. Great name.
Great uniform.
UTSA, the Roadrunners trailer just got an extension, I believe. But Western Kentucky's favorite because this offense, sir, have you done a perusing of this passing offense where they don't run the football? They don't do that in Hilltopper Country. No, they're throwing that thing. They're spinning it. And what we just saw last week, the offense just did everything on the Roadrunners. And I believe in this Western Kentucky team. I think one team's kind of limping down the stretch, and I think Western Kentucky is in a really good place right now. I like Bailey Zapp a lot. This dude, they've already played, and they lost to UTSA early this season, I believe. He still threw for 500 yards and 5 TDs. I think this is going to be a good game. North Texas had almost 500 yards and only had the ball for 23 minutes. And I don't know. I'm a believer in what the Roadrunners have been of late, or yeah, the Hilltoppers of late. So give me Western Kentucky to win and cover.
All right. And keeping it moving on Friday night. Big fan of this tradition, by the way. I don't know when it started. Seems like it's been the last 10 years or so. Pac-12 championship being on Friday night.
Yeah. Do you know why? Really, it has to be because they don't, like, it's one of those rare opportunities that they could just get all eyeballs in the Pac-12 because there's no competition.
Yeah. And it's like Saturday night, if Big 12 versus, actually, I think that's a noon game, but. Although Saturday night ACC championship or this, I might, yeah, that might be toss up. I might rather watch this than the ACC championship. Hmm. But hot take for you.
I was going to say, well, you don't have control over that because you know who's in the ACC title game. Tori's not letting you switch that remote. She's She's not letting you get away from Sam Hartman. It's not happening.
I'm starting to think this is your obsession with Sam Hartman, not the females. But the Pac-12 championship Friday night, we got number 10, Oregon. Number 17, Utah. Utah absolutely beat the brakes off of the Ducks 2 weeks ago. I feel like I just can't get that out of my head. Like, this is in Las Vegas, so nice neutral site here. But, like, we saw, like, a few years ago, like, Auburn, you know, just, you know, beat Georgia handedly. Like a couple weeks before the SEC championship, and Georgia come out back and blow out Auburn in the SEC championship. So we know, you know, that doesn't mean Oregon just has no chance to beat Utah, but I don't know. It's just something the way this Utah team is built. I feel like they're built to stop the run. And I don't know. I think they're going to get another win over the Ducks. So give me Utah to win the Pac-12, to win and cover.
Everything went wrong in that game a couple weeks ago, but they figured some stuff out against the Beavers. 506 yards total. Brown looked a lot better. Travis Dye looked better. I think they have rebounded a little bit. I don't see Mario Cristobal in this group losing to Utah twice in the same year. Utah 2.5. The total for this one's a little high, 59.5. I would stay away from that. I don't think these teams are going to score a combined 60 points in this one. But then again, they did score a combined 45 in the first one. But I don't. I don't know. I just go back and forth on this. But I don't think Cam Rising in this group with Pledger and Thomas are going to be able to run all over Oregon's defense like they did previously. I think Oregon gets that cleaned up, and I think this is a closer game. So give me Oregon to actually win outright here. But it looks like they won't have their offensive coordinator. Joe Moorhead is the favorite to get the Akron job. So I don't know when that starts and when he could be moving on. So that's something
surely
to keep in mind.
He's going to stick it out for the Pac-12 championship, right?
Well, I mean, you got to get in there. You got to, hey, you ready for this? You got to zip on over to Ohio.
Oh, man. That was terrible. You're better than that. With that said, let's smoothly segue over to Saturday. Let's go to Big 12 championship. I'm a little confused by this one because I felt like Big Noon Saturdays, that's been Big 10 stuff. I know they've done some Big 12 stuff with the Big Noon, but Big Noon feels like Big 10. So I felt like the Big 10 championship should have been on at noon, but that's not important right now. At noon, we're going Oklahoma State, Baylor. I would like to say the winner of this is going to the playoff. I don't know if that's the case. So when these two teams played earlier this season, Spencer Sanders threw three picks. So Oklahoma State had 400 yards to 280 yards for Baylor. And they had three turnovers, no picks. They had 24 first downs and 10 first downs for Baylor. So they basically dominated this game and only won 24. And then just the turnovers and everything, and they still won 24-10. So that was at home. I think these are the two best defenses in the Big 12. But I just look at this Oklahoma State defense and just what they're able to do going, getting after the passer. And just because of how that game went the first time these two teams played, it seems like Oklahoma State's capable of playing like much better. So I'm going to take Oklahoma State to win, but I'm going to take Baylor against the spread to keep it close. That's 5.5 points, by the way. Those first two spreads were 3. I don't know if I said that Utah was a 3-point favorite. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Oklahoma State's a 5.5-point favorite in this one.
So you're taking Baylor to not win, but you're taking them to cover.
Yes. Okay. Baylor against the spread, but Oklahoma State to win the game.
Bohannon's banged up. He might not play in this one. That's something to monitor here. He was like a walkthrough, not doing any kind of serious stuff this week, it seems like. Would you like to know the amount of times that Oklahoma State has played the same team twice in a season? Ever.
Oh, ever. Is this the first Big 12 championship they've made?
Yes.
So is that 0?
1. So this comes to us from the Oklahoman, who, great work here from Scott Wright on this. So back in September of 1908, Oklahoma Agriculture and Mechanical College lost to Central State Norman School 8-5 in the first football game of the season. Then in November, Oklahoma A&M defeated Central State 17-0 in the final game of the season. So Oklahoma State 1-0 in seasons where they've played the same team twice. So there's just too much riding on this one. Baylor's banged up. It looks like Dave Aranda's sticking around, which is good news for Baylor. But this is it, man. This is the magical year of Mike Gundy. This is it. Don't blow this. You win. You're in. It's going to break my heart if Oklahoma State doesn't do this. I am going to be cheering hardcore for the Cowboys in this one. Go Cowboys. They've had an unbelievable year. Give me the Cowboys to win and cover here.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I also would pose the question, if Mike Gundy wins this game, does he get a statue built?
Well, we saw how that worked in Dallas.
Maybe not while he's still there.
Right.
But getting Oklahoma State to a college football playoff.
Yeah.
And he's like, I feel like that's going to buy him, honestly, like the rest of his career. Like that's going to by him like retiring on his own terms. Like he might be Oklahoma State's coach for like another 20 years at this point. Like I think this is huge for his legacy. I think this is the chance to do it. I think in the future with Oklahoma and Texas leaving the Big 12, like the perception of the Big 12 might not always be what it currently is. I think this is a golden opportunity and he definitely needs to snatch it. But both of us were Oklahoma State in this one. So keeping it moving to the MAC, we got Northern Illinois and Kent State. Kent State is a 3.5-point favorite. I got some stats for you on this one, man.
I'm ready.
Kent State is the only team in the MAC East that finished with a winning record.
Huh.
7-5. They're in the conference championship.
Wait, hold on. I thought Northern Illinois was in the East.
Northern Illinois, I would think, has to be in the West.
No, I don't think they have to be. I could have sworn they're in the same one.
Oh, well, now you're throwing me off. I was doing some research. Now you're making me question all this research I was doing. Yeah, Northern Illinois is in the West. Okay. Kent State, yeah, 7-5. Never question me, sir.
Okay.
I'll
save the questions for the fact, ACC Coastal and Atlantic conversation.
The West is loaded. Mm-hmm. The worst team in the West went 6-6. Two teams with 8-4, three at 7-5. Both of these teams have a negative point differential on the season, and they are both somehow in the conference championship. So these are some fun facts for you. With all that said, I think Northern Illinois getting through the gauntlet that is the MAC West.
Yeah.
I like them to win and cover.
Everyone except for one is above 500 in the MAC West. That's bonkers. Yeah.
That's what I'm telling you, man. It's gauntlet over there.
It really is. Poor Western Michigan down there at 7-5, and they're last in the MAC West. That's bonkers. Here's the thing. I can't forget Jordan Lynch. If you know me at all, Matt Green, you know I remember the 2013 Orange Bowl with Northern Illinois, the Huskies. Who could forget how mad America was at their inclusion in a BCS bowl game? Give me the Huskies here. Give me them to win outright. Give me the Huskies. You can't do
Jordan
it.
Lynch guy, big Garrett Wolf.
Oh, who could forget Garrett Wolf? Who could forget an iconic season?
I remember on NCAA years ago, like whenever you'd go into like the dynasty mode, like go years into it, Michael Turner would always end up being like one of the Heisman winners because I guess he's just at Northern Illinois racking up like 2,000 yards. I remember he'd always put up huge numbers on the game.
He also had one of the all-time great Falcon seasons of all time. He is one of the most underrated, like underappreciated Falcons of my lifetime.
The burner, man. I was still a low-key Falcons fan at that point in my life when the burner was there. But so you took Northern Illinois as well, right?
Yes, to win and cover.
Okay, and keeping it moving into the Mountain West, my San Diego State Aztecs hosting the Utah State Aggies. This one is in I forget. What city is this being played in? Do you know what city this is played in? It's like where the LA Galaxy play, and this is where San Diego State is currently playing. It is in...
Wait, why is San Diego State playing in LA?
It's not in LA. I just had the city a second ago. I'll come back to that. It started with a C. But
Carson City?
Yeah, it's in Carson, yeah. California. Mm. Yeah, so that's where this game is played. San Diego State's getting a new stadium built. We talked about that last week. Qualcomm and everything.
Yes.
So I think they're building like a brand new stadium on top of where that used to be.
Okay.
So, so they're hosting this
game. Good for the Aztecs.
Say that again?
Good for the Aztecs. They earned it.
Yeah, without a doubt.
Double-digit win season.
Yeah, seriously. So... You know, I've been on the Aztecs.
You have. You're a big Brady Hoke guy. You loved Rocky. What was it? Rocky Long?
Yeah, sure. That. but you don't just go into Dignity Health Sports Park and knock off the Aztecs. So give me San Diego State. They'll be locked. They'll be playing their home games here next year as well. 2022 is next year. So they'll have the new stadium next year.
Okay, good. No, I, man, that's sad to think about. There's just no more home college football games anymore. They're just gone. But that's one of the cool things about the playoff, right? Is that the first round looks like there'll be home playoff games.
We didn't even talk about the playoff.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's so much to talk about, Matt.
We'll get into it.
It's funny to me that so Utah State got in. There was some weirdness. We talked about the weirdness in the MAC, but there was weirdness here. We talked about in the pod last week with Boise and how everything would have to unfold for Boise or Utah State. I forget who else was in the thick of things on that side of the conference, but it's just funny.
Air Force and Utah State ended up being in the tie, but Utah State beat them head to head.
Man, Air Force would have been a better game, I think. Utah State, though, their head coach, you know who it is?
Who's?
Do you know who Utah State's coach is?
Who is their head coach?
Blake Anderson, who left Arkansas State. And then they had Gary Anderson for a long time.
Oh, yeah. Blake Anderson with the wife that died of like cancer or whatever, right?
And didn't Georgia do something really awesome for that?
Yeah, they did like a pink out or something, like a student section, like breast cancer stuff. Yeah.
So... He turned this program around because it was in bad shape when he came in there a little bit. So I don't know. Utah State's just weird. They have the Jordan Love pop up every now and then, but I don't know. Give me the Aztecs here too. I don't think Utah State's very good, and I think they're the worst of those three that could have been in this game between Boise, Air Force, and Utah State. Kind of a bummer that they got in. Sorry, Aggies.
But they got your boy Carson Strong, right?
No, Carson. Oh, how dare you? That's Carson Nevada. Strong is a Nevada Wolfpack,
Nevada,
sir.
Nevada, Utah State. They look the exact same to me.
There's silver right. and navy blue. You're thinking of, but like, hold on. You're there's right. Yeah, come on. Put some respect on the Fighting Jay Norvells.
That's
Carson
my
Strong
bad.
Might be the number one overall pick in the draft next year, sir.
That's a bold prediction right there.
He's going to show
Force
out.
Air Force San Diego State would have been one of those games you love as like a sports writer. Mm-hmm. That like game's going to be over in like 2.5 hours. Like just run the ball every single play.
Right.
So both locked in on San Diego State.
Mm-hmm.
Put them on the board. Aztecs. They're the class of the Mountain West right now. Going to the Fun Belt, as they call it. This one is also a home game for the Ragin' Cajuns versus Appalachian State. And App State is a 3-point home or road favorite over the Ragin' Cajuns. Make that make sense to me, sir.
I don't understand that either. Was that before or after Napier left?
I mean, I guess the Napier thing could have something to do with it. But, I mean, that's just, you know, looking up the ESPN scoreboard and seeing the spread they have listed pretty much. So, don't know exactly how up to date this spread is, but I thought that was interesting. Napier is still coaching through the conference championship.
Oh, is
though.
He?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
But
weird. Why?
I mean, I respect it. It's just one more week, right? It's like,
I mean, these weeks matter.
They do, but I think it says something about your character. Like,
yeah.
There's something you can say to parents in living rooms that you stuck it out with your team or whatever. So I think there's something to that. Like, you don't have to stick around for the bowl, but I think the conference championship, that's not the postseason yet. Even though it is the postseason, it's still like the season. I don't know if that
well
makes-
it's been three straight times they've been three straight or they've been in the position. Last year got canceled, so they probably would have won it last year. But the previous two, they lost, even though he's been 39-12. So Napier still yet to win the Sun Belt. I don't know. They were undefeated in conference play.
He'll fit in well at Florida.
Yeah.
With no conference championships.
Sean Clark, though, doing a really good job at App State. They've won six straight to end their season. This is tough. I think this is going to be a shootout. I think this is going to be a lot of fun going both ways, but I think I'm going to stick to my gut now that Napier staying gets his he gets to ride off into the sunset with a victory here. So give me Louisiana to win outright.
My thoughts exactly, sir. Win one for the Nape.
Like, if you're a Florida fan, you're nervous if he loses this, right? You're like, oh, God. Oh, no.
Maybe, but it's also, you could be like, well, he wouldn't even really focus.
Yeah,
on
that's
that.
True.
Focus.
You
on
can spin
job.
It. Fans, our fan brain is just so dumb.
It's
we spin it however we want.
Capable of some amazing gymnastics.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and now the big one. Going to the SEC.
Michigan, Iowa. Okay.
We got number one Georgia, number three Alabama. Georgia is a 6.5-point favorite. First time Alabama has been an underdog since 2015.
Man.
In Athens against Georgia, against Grayson Lambert. For some reason, after Alabama lost to Ole Miss, people thought the Alabama dynasty was over, and that was not true at all, and Alabama actually destroyed Georgia that day. And potentially Mark Richt's tenure at Georgia. But this is a different story now. Georgia comes in. They've just been the most dominant team in college football. It seems like they've been immune to the chaos that's happened to just about everyone else in college football this year. But it's just this Alabama hurdle that stands in front of them, right? Like, even though Alabama doesn't appear to be as good as they are most years, it's still just this thing that's this monkey that's on Kirby Smart and Georgia's back. In the four games against like opponents this year, are you aware of what Georgia and Alabama have done?
Mm.
Much different performances against Florida, Arkansas, Tennessee, and Auburn.
Yeah.
Four like opponents. Georgia outscored those teams 146-34. Alabama outscored those teams 149-110. Average victory of 9.8 points a game. Georgia was beating those teams by 28 points a game. And I know this isn't the transitive property doesn't always apply to football, but I feel like I just feel like that's really telling on just kind of just how Georgia's approached every game. They've just been so dominant. And this I've talked about multiple times how when Georgia faces a one-dimensional offense, it seems like Kirby Smart's defense is just, if you're one-dimensional, he just puts the shackles on teams like that. Like, you know, most of those teams we talked about were more run-heavy teams, or they have the quarterback that was a running quarterback that was questionable through the air. Like, Bryce Young is not that. Bryce Young is a dynamic quarterback. But Alabama's inability to run and keep Georgia's defense honest, I think, is going to be the most telling thing. Or on the other flip side of that, if Alabama is able to – the only way Alabama is able to beat Georgia is if they're able to consistently run. This is the worst Alabama run offense in terms of yards per carry since 2007. Saban's first year, they averaged 4 yards a carry. That's where they are right now, 4.0 yards per carry. Worst since his first year. And this Georgia rush defense has just been absurd. So if Georgia is able to shut down the run with, you know, 3 or 4 guys and be able to drop guys into coverage, like, I just don't see how Alabama can win in that scenario.
I mean, this is it. I've been telling you this all year, Matt Green. Like, Tennessee put a lot on this team. Auburn just put a lot on this team. Arkansas put pressure on this team. Texas A&M beat this team. They hung with LSU. Florida gave them a strong game early this year. Like, this Alabama team is just, it's just not the same. But we can't discount the Will Anderson revenge game. We cannot discount just how important this game is going to be for Bama's pass rusher, their leader of the defense, because he is a Georgia kid, grew up right outside of Athens, and Kirby didn't know what to do with him. So they didn't offer. They didn't pursue him because they didn't know if he was going to be a 4-technique guy or a edge rusher. And Nick Saban was like, we got this. We'll take care of this. And Will Anderson, now star. Just another huge swing and a miss on the recruiting front for Kirby Smart.
And it's funny, you know how fans love to talk about the Bama bump in recruiting, mm-hmm. and like, it's, oh, Bama just gets preferential treatment. He was one of those that was like the 200th ranked player when he committed to Alabama. And by the end of the cycle, he was like the 15th ranked player in the country. And this guy's just been a baller from day one. So it's like, relax with the Bama bump. Maybe there's a reason they bump. Once Nick Saban thinks they're good enough, it's like, well, you know, that maybe this guy's better than we thought.
Maybe. George Pickens, I'm assuming he's all systems go for this one.
I mean, it's hard to think he's 100% or anything, but
he's getting a lot of snaps.
After seeing him against Georgia Tech, you know, finally catch a pass. I mean, he was probably in on the second, third, fourth offensive snap of the game. So he was in very early. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you'd have to think he's a part of the offense. And that's the thing about Georgia. I think you talked about Will Anderson. Mm-hmm. I think Alabama's defense, I think, is definitely being a little undersold right now. Like, they averaged, like, I think, what, like 19 points a game allowed or something this year. Like, Georgia, I think, has 41, 42 sacks on the season. Alabama has like 2 or 3 more sacks than Georgia on the season. The only thing is Alabama's 109th in the country in sacks allowed. They've allowed 35 sacks this year. Georgia's only allowed 8 sacks, which only Army has allowed fewer sacks on like
they never 200 drop back.
Less yeah. pass attempts. Yeah. So I think that's going to be the biggest difference. Georgia's tight ends, I think, are going to be the X factor in this game. Not only Brock Bowers just being a matchup nightmare, and same with Darnell Washington, but these guys' ability to block, to be able to chip Will Anderson or something like that, and just be able to block and be receiving threats, I just think it's going to open up so many options for this Georgia offense. I think Georgia's running game hasn't been like great, but it's been solid. And I just think there's still things we haven't seen from this offense because they haven't had to do it. They've been up 2, 3, 4 touchdowns in the third quarter. I think they've averaged like 2 pass attempts a game in the fourth quarter. So it's hard to know exactly what this offense is capable of. I feel like this is presented as such a heavyweight matchup between this great Alabama defense versus this great Georgia, or this great Alabama offense versus this great Georgia defense. But Alabama's averaging 42 points a game. Georgia's averaging 41 points a game. Like, this Georgia offense has been very good, and their foot hasn't even been on the gas for four quarters one time this season. I mean, I guess Clemson would be the only game that they've actually played a four-quarter game, and the offense didn't score a touchdown in that game. So it's going to be interesting. I know you hear a lot of people talking about the stats and the numbers, like Georgia's going to dominate Alabama. I just don't really see Alabama. Like, Georgia might be the better team, but I just don't see anyone really dominating Alabama. Like,
you should dominate them, though. That's what I'm saying. What we've seen from this Georgia team, you should dominate. Like, covering this should be no problem. This should not be a problem.
Like, covering this isn't dominating. I mean, winning by 7 points.
Well, no, I'm saying you should win by 20. Like, I think this is something where I'm predicting, and I'm just going to go ahead and give my pick. Like, I'm saying Georgia 45, Bama 20. That is what this game should be. Georgia should blow out this version of Alabama. Bama's banged up. Like, their offensive line's not great. The right tackle spot's really weak. I think they're going to be able to get a bunch of pressure on Bryce Young, who had a really rough day against Auburn's defensive line last week. Georgia's a little bit better, is what I'll say. They're banged up at the running back position.
How big of an impact do you think that Auburn game is having on your perception of Alabama?
No, I mean, not a lot. Like, Arkansas was playing with them. I watched Tennessee take them to the woodshed for three quarters.
Take them to the woodshed. They played with them for three quarters.
The tempo was there. Like, Bama was frazzled for three quarters, and we did a lot of stuff. If Bryce Young does not scramble, just like every other quarterback scrambled out of issues this year to keep drives alive. But like, all I'm saying is this Alabama team is extremely beatable. Bryce Young is covering up a lot of offensive flaws from Bill O'Brien's group. I don't think they have skill talent at wide receiver, but I think part of that too is Jameson Williams getting ejected for targeting in the first quarter probably changed a lot of how that Auburn game was going to go. But I'm interested to see how that works, how Georgia plans for Jameson Williams, because I think he's just a future superstar. But in terms of the guys right now, like Slade Bolden, and they don't have the talent tight end like they usually do. They're not as strong on the offensive line. They're not as strong at running back. Like Trey Sanders might get the most amount of carries in this one. I don't know, man. Like, if they win this, Bryce Young's your Heisman. Like, that is the thing, is if they win, it's because Bryce Young just went ape, you know what, in this game, and just dodged everything, dodged Jordan Davis, Wyatt Carter, everything, ran around, found holes in the scheme, like found just guys just sitting, breaking off their routes and running under stuff. I don't know. I think about the ways that Alabama can win, and I think it's going to be extremely difficult for them to do so. I think Georgia should blow them out, and Georgia loses this, you have to do some soul searching about Kirby. Like, you have to do some soul searching about the program. You have to do some soul searching about what we're doing here. I mean, you'll still be in the college football playoff, and maybe that can right its wrongs. But man, if you're not going to beat this version of Alabama with Brian Kelly coming and just how loaded the SEC West is going forward, I don't know, man. This means so much to Kirby now. The amount of pressure on Georgia to not only win here, but just blow them out, I think is high, because this Georgia team is so good and has been so dominant all season long. They cannot lay an egg in this one. They just can't. I don't know what that does to the psyche of this team.
I don't think there's any pressure for them to blow them out, but there's definitely the pressure to just get over this Alabama hump. But yeah, like, maybe if you lose this game and get to the playoff, there's still
that. But I mean, how are you feeling? Like, if you lose this game, are you even like thinking about the playoff? Like, I'm concerned to record with you on Sunday if you lose this game.
No, I mean, of course you're going to be super disappointed. And if Georgia were to lose to Alabama in the SEC championship and make the national championship and lose to Alabama in the national championship,
oh God,
like, yeah, that would be an absolute nightmare scenario for a Georgia fan.
You fire Kirby at that point. Like, that's just fire.
Exactly,
you're cleaning
like,
house.
Exactly. I was waiting for you to get to that point. You're not firing Kirby. You're not doing anything like that.
If you lose to Alabama twice.
Yeah, you lost to the national champion.
No, you get rid of him. Like, the demons are never getting resolved. You clean house. Like, I'm getting the bad juju out of here. Yeah.
It would be super frustrating.
Get Matt Campbell and we're starting over.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it would be super frustrating, but you're not just going to clean house or anything.
That's what I'm doing.
It would definitely make 20. It would completely erase the eight, nine consecutive weeks that Georgia's been the number one team in the country, which I think it was a record, by the way. The first team to get every unanimous number one vote 8 weeks in a row. So it's just ridiculous how clear cut Georgia's been the number one team in the country this year. So yeah, you're definitely right. The pressure's on Georgia to get it done. I'm thinking, especially with how last season's game went against Alabama, like these teams went, you know,
I would just throw that out the window. I don't want to do that. I don't think you can compare them like that. Mac Jones and that offensive assault and just Steve Sarkisian.
But that's what I'm getting at.
Like everything's different.
Stetson Bennett, that was his like second, third career start.
Right, and he was awful, but that was a different Stetson
in
Bennett.
In Tuscaloosa, exactly. And so this is a much worse, I mean, not much worse, but they're not nearly as good as they were last year. And this looks like a much better Georgia team. So I'm thinking not nearly as high of a score. I'm thinking more of like a 31-17 or like a 31-20 kind of win for Georgia. And keeping it moving.
I hope they don't get over the 17-point threshold. I want Tennessee to own that for the remainder of the season.
Hey, I don't want them to score. I think that's what it would take for this defense, because people have like given this defense credit, but no one's like thinks this Georgia team's like an all-time great team or anything.
Because it's the Stetson thing. It is Stetson. If it was JT Daniels all year, I think they would consider them an all-time great team. I really do.
I 100% agree with that. I think if JT Daniels had been the starter all year and he had 21 touchdowns and 5 picks, just like Stetson does, I think people would, you know, they would be all about this team.
I would agree. They would say this is this year's LSU and Alabama last year. That's what they would say. I would agree.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's fair to question the offenses that Georgia's faced this year. But if they come out and do something like 31-0 against Alabama and then shut someone out in the playoff, like, that's what it would take to be like, okay, this was like an actual all-time great team. And we'll see. We'll see what this defense is able to do. I especially if Brian Robinson isn't healthy. I don't know.
He's not healthy.
I don't know how Alabama will be able to run the ball on Georgia. And they benched their right tackle and center last week. Yeah. Like, you're benching offensive linemen. I don't know how you expect to block Jalen Carter and Jordan Davis and Devontae Wyatt and Trayvon Walker. It should be a great game.
Last thing, and then we can move on. Last thing, give me a prediction. Do we see Stetson and JT in this game?
Does JT Daniels get one snap in this game? May they run a trick play?
Benched. He gets in. Do you think there is a benching situation at any point in this game?
If I'm predicting Georgia to win, I don't think the quarterback's going to get benched.
Well, I mean, they could have a bad first half and they flip in the second half, go full Tua there.
No, it's possible, but I don't think so. Because I saw how Zach Calzada played against this Alabama defense. Like,
hold on, we went to Zach Calzada, not Hendon Hooker.
But Hendon Hooker's a good quarterback. That's true.
Top 10, so people forget.
Hendon Hooker's better than Stetson Bennett. So, like,
I like this.
I mean, there's a lot of quarterbacks that are better than Stetson Bennett. He's been very solid.
Where was this energy weeks ago?
But I don't think Stetson Bennett's – people don't think JT Daniels – or they don't think Stetson Bennett's better than JT Daniels. Like,
right.
I put a poll up on the Georgia message board a few weeks
ago. Oh, no.
Asking who they thought should be like the starting quarterback for the SEC championship, and it was like 52% or something said Stetson Bennett.
I'm surprised. I would have thought more. Like, I don't know any Georgia fans.
But it was like 500 votes or something too. It was like a solid sample size. Mm-hmm. I'm like, I don't know. It's just kind of crazy. Like, I'm not saying Stetson Bennett should be a Heisman candidate or anything, but it's crazy to not appreciate like how good he's actually been, and just what the dynamic he brings to his legs too. Like, I'm not saying it's just what gets lost in the JT Daniels Stetson Bennett conversation to me is that, like, when did JT Daniels become like this proven first round quarterback? You know what I mean? Like, I thought his potential was very high, you know, in Georgia's offense, but he's like a Jamie Newman type potential. It's like, oh, I could be this good. I guess I'm this good. I don't even need to prove it anymore. It's like, well, no, there was a potential that he was going to be that good, but he still never actually proved that he was like this elite first round quarterback. So JT Daniels is a good player, but Stetson Bennett definitely deserves credit for what he's done. But with that said, we'll move to the AAC. Cincinnati, their last big test. Can they get in the playoff? The Cougs. The Cougs are basically the second best team in the AAC, like, in just about everything, it feels like. You just go down the list, and Cincinnati's the best, and Houston's second best. They've got 11 straight wins since losing the season opener to Texas Tech. 11 straight wins for the Cougs. I see this being a close game. I'm going to take Cincinnati, but I don't think they cover the 10.5-point spread. So give me Cincinnati, but Houston against the spread.
Man, that's what I'm doing, too.
That's what you're doing?
Yeah. 10.5 is way too many points, but clearly Vegas knows something about Cincinnati, Houston that we do not. I don't know. I think they have to. Like, this is such a huge game for them just to get in. If they get in, like, we're sure if they get in, they're in the playoff, right?
No, we're not.
Okay.
Like, if they win there, that's what we're talking about. I think.
So you're not.
Alabama loses. Okay. Mm-hmm. Alabama loses, Cincinnati's in 100%. But if Alabama wins and the SEC takes two spots, I could definitely see Oklahoma State. Like, even when you were talking about, like, can we just have a normal weekend, you were ranking Oklahoma State ahead of Cincinnati. So it's almost assumed that Oklahoma State's going to jump Cincinnati. So I think they need Georgia to beat Alabama to solidify that spot, I think.
Man, if Cincinnati loses this game and Fickell doesn't get the Notre Dame job in a span of a week, is oof.
Oof. Oh, man. That could be rough.
Oof.
But keeping it moving, and this was also another home game. Cincinnati's hosting that one.
Oh, are they? Why?
Yeah.
Is that how they do it in the AAC?
It seems like these smaller conferences, yeah, maybe they just question their ability to fill a neutral site. So it seems like a lot of the smaller conference, the Sun Belt, the Mountain West. I don't know where the MAC game. That one's in Detroit. That one's in Ford Field. So I feel like that one's always been at Ford Field.
Well, I feel like they do the bowl game, right? Don't they have a bowl MAC bowl game where it's just like a Sun Belt and a MAC team? What is that called? It's one of the first bowl games, and I always watch it.
Oh, man.
Is it the Ford Motor City Bowl?
It's probably called something like that. I'm sure it's
changed. You know what I'm talking about? It's on during the day always on like a Thursday.
Without a doubt.
Southern Miss has played in it 19 times.
Yeah, because I feel like those games at Ford Field, they just have like a certain look to them.
Mm-hmm.
I'll try to find that one. But keeping it moving, another indoor game in Indianapolis. We got Michigan and Iowa. Not who anyone expected to be in the Big Ten championship a week ago from either side, honestly. We were thinking this is Ohio State, Wisconsin about 7 days ago. And Michigan's an 11.5-point favorite in this one. I think Michigan is the better team, but Iowa just feels like one of those sneaky teams that's not going to get beat handedly. And Cade McNamara is taking care of the ball really well this year, but we know about this Iowa defense. If they can force some turnovers, like, they can beat anybody. So I think Iowa keeps this thing close. So I'm going to take Iowa against the spread, but I think Michigan's going to win this.
You ready for chaos? Are you ready for chaos, Matt Green?
You taking the Hawkeyes?
I'm taking the Hawkeyes here, sir. They've won four straight. Four straight. They got, remember, they were number two in the nation, and they got David Belled. David Belled did this to a couple teams. It's what he does, David Bell over there at Purdue. Guess what? They lost in their losses, 14 total points in their losses to Wisconsin and Purdue. Guess what? They're coming back here. They come from behind in the fourth quarter, block a punt, do what they need to do. This is going to be a low-scoring game. This is going to be the all-time, like, the Harbaugh just dancing and celebrating and everything's awesome. The good vibes. Michigan's back. And what do you know? Kirk Ferentz right there, ready to go, ready to end all of that goodwill, ready to just be like, nope, no Big Ten in the title game for you. It's not what we're doing here. Then, do you know what we get? We get Notre Dame with an interim head coach in the college football playoff. That is what I'm going with. I think Oklahoma State wins, And I think Iowa wins. And I think
so. Under your scenario, if Oklahoma State loses and Michigan loses, who is in your who's in your college football playoff?
I'd have to look at everything again. I would have to like do some examining.
That's when it comes down to. I think
I'd have to. Think
so
about
I'm just fill it in. Georgia, Cincinnati, and Notre Dame has to be in under that scenario. So those three have to become in, and then it's you're deciding between three teams. Two-loss Bama, two-loss Ohio State, or two-loss conference champion Baylor. It's like it has to be Baylor at that point.
Yes, I think it has to be Baylor.
Right?
Yeah.
So I'd like to see the Big 12 champion get in. I've been
I want Oklahoma State in, for sure.
Time. But, oh, man, that's going to be wild.
This is my upset pick of the weekend. I might gamble on this.
I could see it. I just feel like Michigan's better than Iowa, and I feel like they're the same – like Michigan is what Iowa wants to be, right? Like they actually have an identity offensively. I don't think Iowa can score enough to
Well, if the defense gets
them.
A couple picks, forces a couple turnovers, they don't have to. We've
seen
it.
I can see this being a 21-13 kind of game. Like
I think that's the kind of game Iowa wins though. If this is like 38-13, then Michigan
that's
wins.
Fair. Michigan could win these kind of games too, though.
I don't want to play anywhere near that kind of playing style against Iowa. No thanks.
That's fair.
That's my upset pick of the weekend. Go Hawkeyes.
Wow.
Sorry, Max.
Hawkeyes. Lock them in. And so after doing a little research about the bowl game played in Ford Field, that would be the Quick Lane Bowl.
Oh, there you go.
But I know that's not the bowl you're thinking of because that's only been played from 2014 to present.
Yeah, that's not what I'm thinking of.
That was replacing the Little Caesars Bowl.
That's what I'm thinking of. Okay.
But that is also not what you're thinking
of,
sir. Because the Little Caesars Bowl replaced the Ford Motor City Bowl.
That's what I said originally. Yeah, the Ford Motor City Bowl. Yeah,
from 1998 to 2008. So then from 2009 to 2013, it looks like it was the Little Caesars Bowl. But now it is the Quick Lane Bowl.
I feel like Marshall and Southern Miss played in that bowl game at least 37 times. Bring back the Motor City Bowl.
I do see Marshall a lot of Central Michigan, a lot of Western
Dan
Michigan.
Dan LeFever.
Yeah.
Ryan Cubitt.
Dan LeFever, I bet you he did. That's 2007 and 2008. Yeah. I mean, Antonio Brown, JJ Watt may have been on that team.
Byron Leftwich in there.
It's possible. Mm-hmm. In 2000, they played Marshall. I happen to know because I had Chad Pennington's rookie card that he was drafted in 2000. So that would mean 2000. Almost positively, Leftwich was the starter in 2000. But yeah, Marshall played in that in 98, 99, and 2000.
They own that. Marshall was the Motor City Bowl.
And 2009. So you're all over that.
I have these weird memories
of that.
And
Byron Leftwich was the MVP of the game in 2000. So yeah, Pennington was the MVP of the game in 98. So three different MVPs.
Shout out to them. They run that bowl game.
Yeah, D'Angelo Williams was MVP
Memphis,
here. Dan LeFever.
Okay.
T.Y. Hilton was MVP of the Little Caesars Bowl at that point. James Conner, too. Nice star-studded list in the Little Caesars now Quick Lane Bowl.
I like it. Bring it back, man. It's where legends are made.
Exactly. And then the last conference championship of the weekend, the ACC championship, does not feature the Clemson Tigers for the first time since, I should have had that stat lined up and ready to go, but probably like 2012 or something.
I was
going
to say, it's been almost 10 years. It has to be.
Wait, 2014? No, 2014. That's definitely the answer because
Florida State.
2015 and on, they've been in the playoffs. So 2014, it was Florida State and Georgia Tech that year.
Yeah.
So that would have been the last one, 2014. So Wake Forest in Pittsburgh. Wake Forest is a 3-point. No, Wake Forest 3-point dog.
I was going to say,
so
there's
Pittsburgh
no way they're favored here.
Pittsburgh is favored. This Kenny Pickett led offense. Honestly, both of these offense over under 71 on this game.
Cool.
Yeah, the highest one of the weekend. 71.5 So I feel like there's gonna be a lot of points scored in this game. I don't know. I'm going back and forth, but ultimately I just feel like Pittsburgh is trending in the right direction. Wake Forest is 2-2 in their last four down the stretch. And we talked about it too. That was their toughest like four game stretch of the year. Pittsburgh seems to be playing like their best football at the right time. So I'm gonna take the Panthers to win and cover.
I'm also taking the Panthers to win and cover. This is going to be a shootout. It's going to be great. Wake's defense stinks. Pitts isn't great, but I think that's the difference here. Kenny Pickett also putting up just a bonkers 19th year in college. So shout out to him. But yeah, this is going to be good. I think it's going to be a fun shootout, but it's unfortunate there are no stakes involved in this one. I don't think either have a prayer in making the playoff.
No, not at all. And do you think Pittsburgh at one loss would have a shot?
Yes.
That loss to, was it Western Michigan?
Mm-hmm.
Early on, like that's just, same with Baylor's loss to TCU. I feel like those are the two, I wish I could change those results right now. It would make this conference championship weekend that much more interesting. But yeah, so you're taking the Panthers as well. I will lock it in. And we also have a bonus game.
We're not doing this.
USC Cal, 4-7, 4-7. Not even playing for a bowl game. Like, why are you doing this? Why are we playing a game right now?
Is this at Cal?
It is at Cal.
There are going to be four students there total. They've already moved on. They've moved on. And also, like, finals are this week. They're gone. Like, this game, I cannot wait to see the attendance for this one. There's no one. They're both not going bowling. No. No, no, no. Hard pass on all of this. We'll not watch 1 second.
USC fans will be invigorated at the Lincoln Riley, signing that they'll make the trip up to Berkeley.
I don't think so.
What kind of drive is that? That's probably like an 8-hour drive or something, huh?
It might be more than that. It's California goes a long way, man. Now I'm curious. Berkeley, because I wanted to do the coast drive at some point, especially the sports renaissance woman. She's talked about that a lot. Baylor, let's see. Oh, it's only 6 hours. It's not bad.
Only 6 hours.
I thought it was going to be worse than that.
That's not even like point to point either, like border to border either.
Yeah. Looks like if you go, it's a big state.
Never been out to California way.
Oh, I love California.
Need to get out to California.
It's a good spot. It's a good spot. You seem like a California guy too. I could actually see you being all right in California.
You think so?
Yeah, you have some California vibes. Certain things are illegal in California for you.
I'll take your word for it. I had a great time in Las Vegas. Been to Las Vegas a couple times.
Mm-hmm. Never been to Vegas. See, that's where we differ. Never been to Vegas. Would like to go there at some point. Would like to go. Matt Green, that is all I've got. Kind of a long one for this one. We had a lot to hit, though.
A lot to hit, for sure. It's a conference championship weekend, man. It's a final Saturday of the season. It's sad.
It is sad. But then we get bowl season. I love doing my bowl sheets with the fam. So I'm excited to do that. Get all of our picks in. That'll be fun. I love bowl season. Even with the college football playoff, trying to remove that from my life, I'm still going to enjoy that. So
mom's always a big bowl person.
Who is?
I think my mom.
Interesting.
Okay. I think she likes to like passively consume sports.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like bowl games, just like for like a month straight, you can just like have those on the TV.
Yes, they're great background.
Reading
noise.
A book, but yeah. and watching the
Hawaii Bowl,
the Quicken Loans Bowl, or whatever San Diego Credit Union.com Bowl, or whatever they call them these days.
Absolutely. Shout out to Mrs. Green, made her first appearance in the pod.
Yes, sir. Yeah. I think I've mentioned my mom before.
I don't think
on pod.
A lot of Tori. We'll go to Tori for this one. She definitely remembers. She'll be like on September 19th.
She's been mentioned 6 times in the previous 34 episodes. Maybe. Who knows?
There you go. Tori, get to work. No, just kidding. Matt Green, always a pleasure. I appreciate it, sir. And I will talk to you in a couple days.
Yes, sir.
Or not, depending on how this game goes on Saturday. Then we'll just, I don't know. We'll check in.
Hey, even if it doesn't go well for the dogs, well, the show must go on.
I'll get some sound clips, just some ominous music. I'll put some ASMR on for the Sunday pod if that's the case. And I'll be done with the semester, so I will be stress-free. But I have to get there. Very close. Matt Green, talk to you soon.
Yep.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.